Welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton.
And I'm Dr. Zach Clinton, and together we're your hosts. Thank you for joining us.
If you enjoyed today's program and you feel called to help us equip the church to provide mental health care and to help those in need, visit our foundation at aaccfoundation.org. That's aaccfoundation.org. Hey, there you're going to find a little bit more about the impact we're having in local communities to strengthen families and individuals. We're on a mission to help equip people everywhere to improve their relationship with God and the ones they love.
We'd love for you to be a part of our family. Let's bring a message of hope and encouragement to today's generations. Your gift ensures that this program and your station remain on the air.
Hey, on today's program, my son, Dr. Zach Clinton, he's joined by a great guest. Let's get started.
Hey, thank you, Dad. On today's show, I'm joined by someone whose work lives at the intersection of faith, mental health, and resilience in the church, Dr. Mark Mayfield. Dr. Mayfield is a licensed professional counselor, a trusted voice in Christian mental health circles, and the author of multiple books, including his latest that releases today, as of this recording, The Mental Health Handbook for Ministry. He's passionate about helping the church better support those who are struggling with anxiety, depression, trauma, addiction, loneliness, and so much more. And he equips the church to help people grow through their pain. No matter who you are, this conversation will certainly bless you. Dr. Mayfield, my friend, thank you for joining me.
Absolutely, Zach. This is great.
Hey, as we begin, we're here seated just kind of backstage at the AACC 2025 United World Conference. 7,000 people, sold out crowd, packing this place out. The energy's rising, representing all 50 states, 30 countries. We did the research just last night. I mean, it's just fascinating what God is doing. Awesome. I just wanted to ask up front, clearly we'll dive into some of the research you've done on loneliness and more, but community is necessary. Fellowship is necessary, especially in the times that we find ourselves in culturally. Speak to just the excitement that you have coming to an event like this.
Oh man, we mark it on our calendars. My family's all here with me, so my three kids, my wife, and it becomes this mark that, you know, we after every world conference, we put it on the calendar and we just, you know, tick down every week, every month, waiting for it. And it's just so much fun. I'm on the way over here, got stopped by like 10 people. And I remembered one name. So, you know, I was doing better than usual. But just that kind of excitement. People are just glad to be here. I was meeting with somebody that's a part of a big treatment center that's a Christian. And she was saying today, she goes, I'm finally with my people. Mm. And that just hit going, like, we are in the front lines of this mental health crisis. But we're also, in a lot of ways, fighting the field of secular counseling to be heard as quality, clinically sound Christian mental health professionals. And so when she said that, it like, okay, that kind of hit home for me. Like, we're with our people, which is kind of cool.
Absolutely. I love these gatherings because it reminds us that we're not alone.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, ministry, mental health care can feel kind of in those silos.
Yeah.
But to gather together, to worship God, to honestly lock arm in arm with one another, it's a comforting feeling.
It is.
And I'll say this, we need comfort because the last several years, especially as of this recording, the last several weeks have been really chaotic, and it's been heartbreaking. And we've seen, obviously, mental health disaster strike and run rampant across this country, across this globe. But, I mean, we're seeing probably things skyrocketing, especially fear.
I think fear is at the core of it all, right?
Yeah.
And everybody asks me, why aren't we getting better? You know, we talk about this a lot at AACC.
Yeah.
And really, it comes down to this. The hope of Christ is not interwoven into what we do like it should be, which is why we're so passionate about what we do here at AACC and, and what I get to do, you know, and the writing piece and the counseling pieces and that kind of stuff. But it's, I mean, if you look at the stats since 2007, it's anxiety and depression is almost doubling on itself. And we have more mental health professionals than ever before. So statistically, we should be getting better.
Yes.
And we're not.
And I think that's what prompted you, I would assume, in your spirit, to write a really special piece of work, to really help educate and equip the church with the necessary language. Because, I mean, let's begin here, I guess. A lot of pastors will come to us and they'll say this, I want to address mental health from a pulpit.
Right.
I want to talk about it. Right. I just don't know how to, Mark. I don't know how to, Zach. It's like every time I bring it up, it almost sounds taboo. It sounds like this new age stuff and people, I just don't want to say the wrong thing.
So we don't say anything.
So they don't say anything. Yeah. An indecision is a decision after all.
Yep.
Speak to, obviously you have a heart. Again, we just mentioned release of the book was today as of this recording, the mental health handbook for ministry for the church. Speak to just the heart behind it all.
Well, it's funny. I had this desire. I'm a former pastor, you know, well, I guess once a pastor, always a pastor,
right.
But, I've had this desire for a long time, and I've had this idea for a very long time, and published, you know, and presented it to 6 publishers, and they all said no. And so the 7th one was Baker Publishing, and they said yes. And so they took a risk on it. But the heart behind it is that very thing. It's, I think we get a lot of pastors that are just paralyzed by the need. And they think they have to be the end-all, be-all, fix-all. And it's like, no, just be a stopgap, be a presence. And so this book is essentially a desk reference guide. It's not a read-through. I tell pastors right now, I'm like, you can read through it if you want. It'd be pretty boring. But if you want to read through it, go read through it. But grab the grab tabs.
Yes.
Like you tab your Bible or you tab your DSM-5.
That's
you know,
right.
Tab
That's
it.
Right.
And then label it depression chapter, anxiety chapter, LGBTQ plus chapter, eating disorder chapter, you know, the one you know, working with, high achieving families chapter.
Yes.
And when you've got people coming into your church, just pick it up and tab over to that chapter and prepare yourself. What does the Bible say about it? What is it clinically? What should you do? And then when you're above your pay grade, like what's the next steps?
Yes.
And so that's basically the gist of the book. So that instead of crippling pastors, it equips them.
I've heard you say in the past, just even in personal conversations, that I think a lot of churches and even pastors and ministry leaders, they're well-meaning, but they're under-equipped.
Yes.
And so, you know, we talk a lot about how science and scripture, they really do go hand in hand, especially when it's truth-based, right? Effective science, it's going to back scripture and vice versa.
Right.
But being able to recognize then, why do the fields of psychology and theology clash so much? And why have we separated them within the church so much? What would you say to that?
I think we don't have an informed understanding. And so I have this conversation all the time, you know, teaching at Colorado Christian in the master's program. Students come, you know, I think bright-eyed and like, we're going to do this. And then they're like, but it's going to go against my faith. It's going to go against this. And I'm like,
right.
So take a step back. And what I always tell them is, if we go back to Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 and Genesis 3, the fall of man, right? That separation from God has disrupted our identity. Our identity, the idea of identity is to bond to something.
Yeah.
We're not bonding to Christ. We're going to find something else to bond to. Mm. But that yearning of bonding to Christ is still there. And I said, so every theorist is a part of this broken world created in the image of God. Every theorist is trying to make sense of this world that's broken. So don't you think if we have that pull towards bonding to Christ and we don't know it, and we see the brokenness around us, there's going to be shreds and threads of truth in every single theory because that's the human condition.
Yeah.
We are wanting to find our purpose and our belonging and our creator, whether we realize it or not. So I challenge students. I'm teaching theories of personality right now, and I just challenge them. I go find the thread of truth in every theory. And then write it down, bring it back to me, and let's talk about it. And then how do we integrate that? Or my new favorite term right now, David Entwistle uses this term, of reintegration.
Yes.
Right? Not integration, because it's not the first time.
Right.
It's getting back to the way that it was meant to be. So how do we reintegrate these things into our Christian and biblical worldview so that we can be the best help for that person in front of us? And so clinical side, what we do, pastoral side, can be done very effectively.
Absolutely. And obviously, this book is packed with clinical wisdom, but also from a biblical worldview.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to chat about here for a moment is mental health at large, right?
Sure.
I think sometimes people don't really understand like what it all encompasses. We know this. Every time the Bible or scripture references the soul, it's very holistic in nature, similar to the root of the word psychology, psuche, right, which is body, mind, and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It's holistic.
Yep.
And so recognizing it's not just about anxious thoughts or stinking thinking, right, or these cognitive distortions. Yes, that's a part of it. But man, it is relational at large.
Mm-hmm.
Speak to just as you teach, as a professor, and as you continue to build out resources for the church, what is mental health?
Well, I think you spoke to it just there. It's the integration or reintegration of those three things. And I think we've, as a society, have separated it. If your body is sick, go to the doctor. If your mind is sick, go to the counselor. If your soul is sick, go to the pastor. Well, what if we were all equipped to handle those things? And how much of our physical sickness is actually due to our soul and our mind?
Mm.
You know, and so the reintegration of those things, and I think really equipping the pastoral community to go, like, if we have a true theology of suffering and a true understanding of what you just said, you know, this, the mind, body, spirit, it's almost like you can't unwind or unweave them. They're so interconnected. And so how do we find ways to engage and partner with each other instead of fighting each other? You know, I have conversations a lot, and I'm sure you do too, with Nuthetic biblical counselors that the Bible only. And I'm like, I don't disagree, but we're missing a large swath of wisdom in that. So how do we work together instead of fight against each other? You know, and so same thing with physical doctors. I mean, I can't tell how many times I've fought with physical doctors to get a sleep deprived EEG or, you know, something to go, their physical symptoms are a result of something going on in the brain and their mind. And let's get to the root of it. Well, what are you talking about? You don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, maybe I do.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely.
And let's have those conversations instead of be fighting.
And that's what I think I respect and appreciate about you so much, Mark, is that you have a love for the difficult conversations. You're willing to lean in. You're willing to show up. In this book alone, you cover some hard topics. Depression, trauma, grief, self-harm, personality disorders, so much more. Mm-hmm. Things that, again, the church maybe doesn't feel equipped or maybe doesn't feel efficient in their messaging.
Yeah.
And for you, you know, you have a background in even stepping up to the plate and working with families who have been deeply impacted and burdened by suicide.
Yep.
Like, you're somebody that knows language. And so I'm thinking about just the church. What maybe is some practical advice in the middle of this conversation today? Rather than saying nothing because they're so afraid, what are some things that they can begin to do to create that non-judgmental atmosphere, to come as they are, but to leave a little bit different?
Sure, I love that question. So two things I would say, and I use this with my kids, so it's a parenting technique too, right? So don't come up to your kid if you notice that they're going, you know, first of all, you gotta be a student of your congregation.
That's right.
You gotta be a student of the people you're working with. How many times have you worked with pastors and leaders and they look 3 feet past you and you're like, you're not even, I'm not even here.
I don't even feel seen.
So I really work with parents and pastors. Know your kids, know your congregation, and be not afraid to go, hey, good to see you, Zach. How you doing? And you can go, oh, I'm fine. But I look at your eyes. I know you well enough to go, nah, I don't think you're doing fine. And then not pushing, but noticing. And then I'll say this. I'm ready to listen when you want to talk. Mm. And I do it with my kids. I encourage people to do that all the time. Why? Because that opens the door to go, okay, Mark just asked me he wants to listen to me.
Yeah.
Not, I'm going to get a lecture, I'm not going to be fixed, I'm not going to be, you know, whatever, I just need to be listened to. And so then the invitation comes in, and then when you show up, step up, I don't care if my, you know, if my phone's ringing and it's you, I'm going to drop it because I asked, you know, pick up the phone, talk, listen. So I think that's one big one. Mm-hmm. The second piece of that is don't ask somebody how they're doing unless you've got 15 minutes. I get so frustrated with this culture, especially down in the South where I'm at, you know, you got the South and Virginia too, of like, oh, I'm blessed, better than I deserve, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, stop it. Like, we're perpetuating a culture of loneliness and isolation when we do that. And so I guarantee you, if you try this, it is, it's interesting. I did that once with somebody at the grocery store that, you know, we always pick the same checkout line with the same cashier just to build relationships. And I did that with them and they're like, oh, like, you really want to know? I'm like, yeah. Like, I wouldn't ask if I didn't, you know? So it just creates that invitation for community.
You're listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family. I'm Dr. Zach Linton, actually sitting backstage here at our 2025 AACC United World Conference with a dear friend. He also happens to be a licensed professional counselor, a ministry and a mental health leader, and an incredible author. And we're unpacking his newest book, The Mental Health Handbook for Ministry in the Church. Dr. Mayfield, to pick up our conversation, we've talked a lot about what mental health is. We've talked a little bit about some of the challenges that we're seeing across culture. But one that I want to specifically dive deep into, that you've done a lot of research in, you actually have a clinical workbook for us here in our Hope and Healing series, is on loneliness.
Yeah. Yep.
Loneliness is something that I think is infiltrating all across the country. Why? Because hell would love to get you alone.
Yep.
Isolation is the enemy, right? Yep. To faith and to progress in life. Speak to some of the research that you found on just the detriment that it can be.
It is the mental health crisis. Mm. I challenge people to go, that we are in a mental health crisis without loneliness. And I think loneliness is kind of the impetus for the mental health crisis. Mm. I think that's the only reason that we're seeing an increase in anxiety, depression amongst our teens, amongst our young adults, increase in suicide, overdoses. It's because we've curated, or our life has been curated for them without physical face-to-face contact. Yeah. And so there's no reciprocity, there's no give and take, there's no feeling of the energy in the room, there's no ability to ask that question like we talked about before the break of just, hey, I'm ready to listen when you want to talk. I know that you're not doing okay type of thing. But I'm just going to be like, I'm going to be very bold in this statement is there is no healing apart from Christ, period. And I remember when I first started out in this field almost 20 years ago, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to step into the secular counseling world because I like, you know, I learned from Larry Crabb. I liked him, but I think he's a little bit too, I'm sitting here now 20 years later going, nope, Larry Crabb had it figured out. And this is the way, where we need to be. Like, you know, obviously I'm not going to sit in my sessions and proselytize, but like the hope of Christ is where it's at. And I think that's where the church is poised. So Cigna did a study 2022, 20,000 participants, right? You just finished your doctorate. You know, that's a big sample size.
Big sample size.
20,000 participants, 54% felt like no one knew them well. And this is the one that gets me all the time, is 36% felt like they had nobody to turn to when life got tough. So if you think of a room of 1,000, you're going to have multiple thousands here at the conference, but a room of 1,000, that's 540 people didn't feel like they had anybody that knew them well. And 360 had no one to turn to when life got tough. Mm. Y'all, the church is primed and ready to be the receiving arms of this movement. Yeah. Loneliness is a state of being, not a state of feeling. And I think a lot of times we think we can like jolt somebody back into feeling better. Well, no, it's consistency, it's intentionality, it's reciprocity, it's commitment. To get them back to a feeling of being seen and known and loved and valued.
Yeah. What do you attribute, Mark, some of those loneliness statistics to? Because those are eye-opening. Those are staggering. Those are heartbreaking. I'm thinking about the next generation. Obviously, we could talk about technology.
Sure.
Jonathan Haidt's book, right, The Anxious Generation, just like raising our kids on Mars by giving them no limits as it relates to their devices.
Yep.
I mean, it's crazy because we do live in a comparison culture that's built on perceived perfection. We do live in a world where there is cyberbullying and so much is happening.
Yep.
There's so much going on. What are some of the contributing factors that you're seeing that are really beginning to almost like push this loneliness thing over the edge?
Complacent Christianity. I think is one of them. And I hope that in these last couple of weeks that's gotten shaken loose a little bit. You know, love the quote, let's make heaven crowded. I mean,
love that.
This is the right place to do that, right?
Yes.
So I think complacent Christianity is a big one. I think crippling parents not to know what to do and what to say. Hmm. I think the Christian church is afraid to speak up to the gender ideology crap that's going on.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid they're going to be
canceled,
right? And we've got a dear friend that works with us that was canceled out of California, like
right.
But she's bold and she's stood her ground. Like I think there's a lot of fear in that and I hope that's changing. Mm-hmm. I think there's that in the indoctrination culture. I think parents don't understand that when their kids play games online that there's open doors to things that they have no idea on. I think the device piece is it. I mean, it's not the only thing. But it's a big contributor. I just think it's a lack of, just to simplify it, it's a lack of understanding Deuteronomy 6. Wow. Right? First of all, the Shema, right? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. But then it talks about this idea of how do we do discipleship with our kids?
Yes.
When we wake up and when we lie down, when we walk along the way, bind them to our hearts, bind them, you know, sitting at the, you know, all these things. And so really working hard to equip the family and to be back to, I mean, Dr. Dobson, again, another great man that was lost this year, had, I think, a corner on the market, understanding that the family was the culture shift of a generation.
Yes.
And we have to get back to equipping moms and dads to be the chief disciplers of their homes and to stand up and go, you know what? We're not going to be like that family. Like, for us, devices are a tool, not a luxury. You know, so there's a lot that we can do. Like our household, we play video games on Friday nights as a family, not carte blanche whenever they want to. My 17-year-old has a dumb phone, and we told her at 17 she can get a smartphone. She's like, I don't want one.
Love that.
Like, so that creating that culture that gets back to faith, family, foundation, I do think if that happened, we would see a decline in the statistics, not an increase.
Mm. I love what you're saying. We need a courageous level of Christianity. C.S. Lewis said this, the only thing the church cannot be is moderately important.
No.
We have to step up and stand in the gap and really just continue to move forward in this particular moment in time because it's necessary more now than ever.
Yes.
You're talking about recently I saw a pastor had asked AI, if you were the devil, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
And it went through this entire spiel. And it was fascinating how accurate it was, almost to the point of being scary.
Right.
But there was a statement in there that said, I would fracture the family because if I can fracture the family, I can fracture the future.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what you're getting at, right? This idea of, my goodness, I want to make sure that we're investing into families, into relationships, because that is where help and hope and healing is ultimately found. Healing cannot be found in hiding.
No.
And what I love about what you've done, and you've really made it a mission throughout your life, you've written a lot of books on this, and you've talked a lot of, I'm sure, talks and sermons on this very thing, is giving people language to begin to verbalize their emotions, to experience them, to explore them, but then to express them.
Right.
Speak to the importance of that.
Well, I think we have to understand that emotions and feelings are two different things. And I love doing a talk when I have families. So when I do a family talk, I'm like, so how are emotions defined in your home? And they're like, I don't know. And then I'll say the next question is, so how would you define feelings? And there's like deer in headlights. I'm like, how many of you recognize that feelings and emotions are two different things? And like everybody raises their hands. And I said, emotions are our God-given physiological responses to something outside of us or inside of us. So it's kind of that trigger. You know, when I get angry, the hair on the back of my head stands up or my fists get tight. That's an emotion. Wow. Emotions are not sinful.
Right.
Feelings are sinful or can be sinful.
Right.
So when we look at something like, you know, in I think it's Joshua where it talks about the heart is deceitful above all else, who can know it? You know, it goes on to talk in context that God's the one that searches it and knows it. Well, it's the feelings. So the feelings then are the meanings we make from those emotional experiences based off of our observations and experiences of life. So our childhood primarily foundations, right? So I always tell people, I tell pastors, like y'all have been telling people that their emotions are bad. Mm. Like, how about we start teaching people how to engage those emotions and rewrite their feelings for positive? There's no bad or, you know, there's no good or bad emotions.
Yeah.
There might be some good or bad feelings.
Yeah.
But what we do with it. So I think it's, again, and this is where I get really frustrated with our counseling profession and with the pastoral. We finish seminary. We go out into the world. We're the best pastor we're going to be the first 2 or 3 years outside of seminary. But if we don't lean into continuing education, into growth, into community, into iron and sharpen iron, then we're going to just do what we know and not be challenged. Same thing with counselors, right?
That's
the best counselors 2 to 3 years after graduation if we don't continue to push ourselves. And so I always challenge pastors, maybe you're wrong and that's okay if you are. Mm. What does it look like to lean into something with humility and vulnerability and then adjust?
Continue, like you said, to have that awareness, to have that attunement, and then to also have the humility or the accurate understanding,
right,
of who we are.
Right.
Because we don't have all the answers.
Right.
We need help. Dr. Mayfield, where can our audience go to pick up a copy of your new book,
yep,
the Mental Health Handbook for the Church and for Ministry, but also where can they go to find out more about you?
The book, Amazon, anywhere books are sold. Baker Publishing's got it on their website. My new website, mentalhealthmadesimple.life, is where you can come find about me. Also, aacc.net. Google my name. I don't know. Find. There's a lot of different places you can find stuff. So
mentalhealthmadesimple.life,
yes,
aacc.net, Amazon, wherever books are sold. I hope and pray that you guys would lean into the opportunity and this resource that Dr. Mark Mayfield has provided us. I'll close with this final thought. It's a clarion call to each and every one of us listening. Recently, Annie F. Downs was at an Ewoman conference for us in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and she gave us this charge as we left. She said, when the temptation is to give up, the invitation is to show up.
Nice.
Just keep showing up. Dr. Yep. Mark Mayfield, my friend, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
This is Dr. Shawnee Anderson, and I'm a licensed clinical psychologist who's been in practice for over 30 years. In my clinical experience, one of the hardest parts for someone struggling with their mental health is the very first step, the just reaching out for help part. I understand that asking for help is hard, but finding that help shouldn't be. At Christian Care Connect, the mission is to make it easier to find a Christian clinician or coach who is compatible with you, someone you feel comfortable with, who shares your faith and values. Whether you're walking through grief, battling anxiety or depression, or facing any other of life's challenges, excellent mental health care providers are here to come alongside you with support that is both clinically excellent and distinctly Christian. If you or someone you know is looking for help and healing, we invite you to take that next step today. Go to ChristianCareConnect.com to find a provider within 100 miles of you. For further support or questions, you can email us at contact@ChristianCareConnect.com. A new way to start your journey to wellness and peace of mind.